10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, the game on this Monday. Hope you're having a great day. We continue the fun discussion with our man John McClain down in Houston. John, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you for asking.
How are things down there in Houston just a couple of weeks into training camp as the first preseason game approaches?
All training camp practices don't look any different to me. I watch Stroud throw every pass, and I'll look at one daily report, a site, and they'll say he threw well. Another one will say he was off target. It's kind of like beauty in the eye of the beholder, especially when you don't know if a receiver ran a wrong route. That's sick, because nobody will tell you that. When people watch Ward, sometimes he might be just a little off target. And people go, oh, boy, that pass was incomplete. He was off target. When the fact is, the receiver was supposed to break the route off a half yard early or a half yard late, and it wasn't Ward's fault. And that's something we'll never know. Just like all these sites like Pro Football Focus that have grades on offensive linemen, you can tell when an offensive lineman gets beat one-on-one, but you don't have a clue what that offensive lineman's assignment is. If he's caught in the middle and he's passing somebody off to somebody else blows it. I remember in 1983, and I'm sorry if I told you guys this story, but Bruce Matthews was a rookie, 7th overall pick, had a 2-week holdout, came in, started immediately. At guard, Mike Munchak was the other guard. And they had a game against Cleveland, and they got beat. And I wrote that Bruce Matthews got beat two times by defensive tackle Reggie Camp. And Munchak came up to me the next day. He said, how long have you been covering the NFL? And I told him. He said, I thought that you would have known better than what you wrote about Bruce. I said, what? He said, neither one of those sacks were his fault. That wasn't his assignment. He did his assignment right. Somebody else did his wrong. And, of course, they're never going to tell you who somebody else was. So I went up to Bruce and I apologized. He said, don't make him, no big deal. But I always knew, if you don't know, don't say. Try to ask and find out. Back in the old days of covering the NFL, you could walk up to a player. The player would say, no, I blew that. Today, they don't do that. But anyway, you have to be very careful. And that's something I try to watch carefully every day in camp to see. And there's really no way to know if a receiver or if a tight end or a running back catching a pass, is it their fault or is it Stroud's fault? But Stroud, like Ward, is always going to get the blame.
What did you think about the Hall of Fame ceremonies this week in Canton as they welcomed a new class?
Well, this will sound bitter, and my wife always tells me, don't say this. It always bothers me when the Hall of Famers do not thank the selection committee that voted them in. And when Andre Johnson went in 3 years ago, not one person of the five thanked the committee. And I think about how hard people work when they present players, how much research they do, how many quotes. And you don't have to single them out and say, well, I want to single out Big Joe for all that hard work he put in there. But just thank the selection committee. And two of them did. I thought, sure, Drew Brees would, but he didn't either. I thought the speeches were great. I thought Brees had one of the best I've ever heard. And those speeches get written for them. And then they can change anything they want. And Drew never even had to look up. He was handling that audience. That's why I was surprised he wasn't better on TV. He's getting another chance because I think he's one of those guys you can't do like Aikman, and Brady did a better job last season. You have to be critical in your analysis. You don't have to be a cheap shot artist. You just have to point out when somebody screws up. And they know. And I thought his was great. I liked Larry Fitzgerald. I've always liked Fitzgerald because his dad was a sports writer, longtime sports writer. Minneapolis died recently. So I thought the speeches usually are good. I'm so glad the Hall of Fame has shortened them. I can't remember, and I love the fact that Adam Vinatieri took a shot at Bill Belichick and his girlfriend. I thought that was great. Vinatieri's speech was really good, too. And then I thought, ultimately, moving it to the day is good. Don't do it at night. They have parties that are thrown for them by their teams at night. Some of those speeches, somebody brought up about Ray Lewis going on and on and on. Ray Lewis had the longest speech in history. You thought he was a Baptist preacher giving a sermon on Sunday. And all those guys, you think about it, the Hall of Famers are older. Their families are older. So if your speech is lasting 11 or 12 at night, they're not going to be spending a lot of time at their party. So they wisely moved them back during the day. And they don't have a person standing up there like when Bruce Matthews, he introduced Mike Munchak, and it was windy, and it was outside. It was during the day, but his pages blew away, his notes. And then he had to wing it, and I told him, you're better than you would have been with your notes. But overall, I thought they were great. Those guys worked really hard, and every year it gets harder and harder. This year there's so many players who could go in on the first ballot, and yet there's so many who are not in on the first ballot who deserve it. And I hate to see those guys get passed over for first-timers, but some of them you cannot avoid, like Adrian Peterson.
All right, I'm with you all the way on that. John McClain is with us. John, I'm always fascinated by who gets to introduce the person going to the Hall of Fame. And a guy that got to introduce a player on Saturday is one that you know well. He is one of my favorite players. And Jamie Williams inducted Roger Craig in the Hall of Fame. They have been friends since their days in Nebraska. I love the emotion. I love the bond. I love the brotherhood with players like that. I thought it was really cool. And, of course, you covered Jamie Williams when he played for the Oilers.
In 1984, Jamie Williams came in here from the Giants. He had long Jerry curls, and his nickname was Spider-Man. I didn't even know what Spider-Man was. And his locker was full of Spider-Man comics, and he showed me who Spider-Man was. And then he showed me, I didn't write it right. He said, Spider-Man's not one word. Spider-Man's two words. You got this punctuation between it. And I said, okay, well, if you do something positive, I'll call you Spider-Man. And I really liked Jamie a lot. He was close to Warren Moon, closer than any other player. And Jamie used to like to dance around the locker room to the music and stuff. And I remember being at the Pro Bowl, and he got kicked off the sideline. And he wanted me to raise hell for it. And as they were taking him away, I think he was mouthing off or something. He said, the John McClain that used to cover me, he would have come after. He wouldn't let this happen. And I said, well, that John McClain doesn't cover Spider-Man anymore. Jamie went on to get a doctorate. And he was at Nebraska forever. I always had hoped he would find a way to come back here. But he and Roger Craig were in elementary school, junior high school, and college together, and I was so happy to see him have the honor of introducing his longtime friend. And, of course, Craig announced that, you know, he's got that kind of dementia.
Yeah.
It's weird to me. Dementia is dementia. Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it comes up quicker, what it is, but, boy, it was just so sad at a time that is usually so uplifting.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. John, talk about preseason. When you came in and covered the NFL, were there six preseason games they played?
Yeah. Yep.
That just blows my mind.
Was six preseason games. and training camp was 2 months, and they had a week for the rookies. And the rookies came, and the veterans wanted to come early, and a lot of them did because they didn't have places to work out. You had to go get a health club membership. All those old facility, when I started covering them, they may have had one bench press and a couple of dumbbells. And guys, when you look back at them, they were not muscle. They did cardio. They ran. They did up-downs like they're in the military. And then some of them, you'd see them doing bench presses, but they didn't want to wait around while they're on the other linemen.
Right.
And it's that way of baseball players. If you look back, baseball players were tall and skinny. They're not muscly like they are now, because they didn't lift weights.
Yeah.
And so back then, they used training camp to get guys into shape.
Wow.
And started doing it immediately. And the guys knew they had to do it. It was hard. But they didn't stay in shape, because if you wanted to get in shape in off season, you had to go buy a gym membership somewhere, and they didn't pay you enough money to where you could afford it if you had a family.
So were quarterbacks, like back in that day, was Dan Pastorini playing all 6 preseason games? Was Stabler doing that? Bradshaw?
No. The way they would do it is they would build up, and just the opposite of what they do now. And they would be like, first game, they play a lot of rookies the way they do now, second game. But when they get to three of the starters play one quarter, four they play two quarters, five they would play three quarters, and then the last one they would play about three quarters of the game and amp up to be ready for the regular season. And instead, it's just the opposite today, because guys are in such great shape. You know, they go to their stadiums, they get fed great, they get the best weight, strength, and rehab, medical, machines, anything you want, you get it. It's inexcusable for guys to show up today and not be in shape. There's no fat man's table anymore in the cafeteria, because guys know that if they show up out of shape, they're going to be in a heap of trouble.
We'll have more with John McClain down in Houston coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel and 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Monday, continuing with John McClain down in Houston. John, I saw that the Hall of Fame game averaged about 7 million viewers on Thursday, making it the most watched Hall of Fame game since 2017. I got to tell you, even though it's the game that I usually tune into for maybe the first quarter and then I check out, I was entertained by it, especially seeing Carson Beck and Haynes King go head-to-head.
Well, you watched more of it than I did, but I read everything about it. And to me, I can't remember a Hall of Fame game that was better. You know, it was 33-30, a lot of offense. You had two really good young quarterbacks. King started out at Texas A&M. Jimbo Fisher didn't think he's good enough, so he transferred, and it worked out pretty well at Georgia Tech. And, of course, the Beck story, my goodness, that's a tremendous one. And so if you score a lot of points, that's what people want to see. And I'm guessing when they tuned in, they did not turn out.
It definitely was. So it's kind of that time. We were talking about this earlier, because it kind of led into this, because Sean Payton inducted Drew Brees into the Hall of Fame. But you know, a lot of people don't like him because they go back to the whole, you know, Bountygate stuff with Greg Williams and all that. Who do you think the most hated or disliked head coach in the NFL is currently?
Well, let's see. Bill O'Brien's at Boston College. So Payton is, and it's not just because of that. Sean Payton is a great coach. Member of their media called me, calling Hall of Fame voters, and asking me if I thought Sean Payton had a chance to get in the Hall of Fame. And I said, not before Mike Shanahan. I said, Mike Shanahan won 2 Super Bowls. Payton's won 1. To me, Shanahan deserves it more than any coach that's out there. But Payton did a great job. He had total control in New Orleans. He has total control there. I see a lot of people will say the general manager, man, John Lynch needs to draft this guy, that guy. Kyle Shanahan has final say on personnel. So does Andy Reid. So do so many coaches. They don't say, hey, I got final say, but they do. Peyton has done a great job, but he does not treat people well. He bullies them. He just, there's been too many stories I've heard at New Orleans and Denver. I don't know him. I've never met him personally, one-on-one. I know people that know him that do, but the people that are around him a lot, they just don't like his personality. But he wins, and that's all that matters. And I'm probably thinking unpopular today. It would probably be, you know, maybe it's Nick Sirianni. Guy's been to two Super Bowls, and he's won one, and they put him on the list of coaches on the hot seat because he's in Philadelphia. Like everybody in Philadelphia does not like Nick Sirianni. And if he gets fired, he'll get a job in about 30 minutes. And Aaron Glenn is not a popular coach, not because of his personality. Well, I'll take that back. When he took over last year, and he had been a player for a long time, he had played for the Jets. He knows the New York media. And he starts telling them the way it's going to be. And this is kind of bullying the New York media. And I'm thinking, how stupid can you be? Of course, he's from Texas A&M, so that explains it. But it and he changed the way he treated them because they were just crucifying him. And I think, you know, you talk about coaches on a hot seat. To me, he would be number one. And but as far as unpopular, I think Peyton is not real popular, but with people that are around him a lot, maybe it's just – but he's such a great coach, it overshadows it. And Aaron Glenn's a good guy who's just in a tough situation, maybe in over his head. I don't know that Todd Bowles is real popular, but that's an interesting question. I'd have to look at every coach in the league before I could say that.
Vrabel got some votes around here, as you can probably imagine.
Oh, I can imagine Mike got some, but he didn't get any in New England now, did he?
No, not at all. John, how close do you think we are to two preseason games and an 18-game schedule?
Well, I think it'll be part of the collective bargaining agreement. The union will have to agree to it, and NFL – we'll give them more money. Probably can't give them any more time off. I thought the Players Association should have been doing whatever it could to get insurance for life. But the problem is the owners have proved they'll play with replacement players that count. They'll just let the players all ride off into the sunset. The Players Association knows that. You cannot bully the NFL owners because they're worth billions and billions. And so it's not like baseball. Baseball is going to have a lockout. Could go all next season if they continue to say they need a salary cap, which is pretty stupid considering the Brewers and the Rays are the two best teams. The Dodgers haven't won squat. They're 1-9. You know, that just shows you get Terry Scruble, you can't win. Now, they'll probably win the World Series, of course, but they're probably bored right now. But I do think that we'll never see that with the NFL. And whenever they want to go to 18, they'll do it. Maybe I'm guessing they'll need 2 years to implement it, and players will make a lot more money, but so will the owners.
Do you think that they would need to look, and I know this would be tough on the schedule, but would they need to look at adding a second off week for teams?
Absolutely, they'd have to have two byes. And I think I've told you this guy before, when you have a Super Bowl in your city, you have to have the whole month of February available to you, hotels and everything, in case something happens, a natural disaster like Hurricane Katrina, something like that. So you could move the Super Bowl back. You could play it, you know, you could play it on baseball opening day if you wanted to, and it's going to dwarf baseball. So they've got to give them a second bye week. And I can't imagine that would not be a big part of the negotiating.
Oh, I'm with you on that. And, John, do you think with all that, they expand the weeks and a bye week and everything adds on, would they ever consider moving the opening season back to August at some point? I know college football does their thing with Labor Day, but, you know, we're all August. There's nothing really going on. Any thought that they would go back into August and start the season?
The only reason they changed that, Joe, was because the ratings started in a hole because – people were traveling, and they were not watching the NFL. Now, at this point, the NFL may override any kind of holiday And maybe people, you know, you could be in your car and still watching the NFL.
Right.
And so maybe, but I think it'd be better just to move it back in later in February. Keep it out of cold weather cities unless you got a dome stadium. But they also like that extra time off, especially since they're going to put so much on the players' plate once the season begins with Thursday night, Wednesday night, Saturday, almost every day of the week. I don't know how some players keep it straight because it changes so much.
You know, it's funny, John. Like, my grandpa told me, like, in the 40s, horse racing and boxing was like, that was it. Then baseball was always there. And then football. Was there a defining moment, in your opinion, where football turned the corner and became king? Is there one moment, one anything?
Absolutely. First of all, college football was bigger than pro football. NFL was created in 1920. College football, led by Red Green, selling out 100,000-seat stadiums in Chicago and Philadelphia. It's hard to believe it, but those stadiums did have – they'd Soldier Field at one point seated 100,000, and Philadelphia Franklin Field was 100,000, and Red Green was the biggest thing in the country. And after World War II, the NFL got bigger, but it was the 1958 – championship game between the Baltimore Colts and the New York Giants. First game went into overtime, and people had never seen overtime. And the Colts won. Alan Ameche, a fullback, scored on a short run, and that got great ratings. And mainly back then, it was all newspapers. And New York teams had 15 newspapers
wow.
covering them. Plus, they had United Press International, the Associated Press. And so the media, especially newspapers, fell in love with the National Football League. And even back then, the advent of the AFL threw the ball like crazy. You know, chicks dig the long ball. The NFL was 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and quarterbacks throwing more interceptions and touchdowns, and running backs getting paid more than quarterbacks did. And here comes the AFL with their rules, and they widened it. When I was a kid, I was 8 years old, and I would have, at my grandparents' house, NBC on one little bitty black and white TV and CBS on another little black and white TV, and we'd have the Cowboys and the Oilers. And for young people, the Oilers, with George Blanda throwing it all over the place and high-scoring, close games, that was so much better than watching the NFL. And the way they played football in the AFL caused the NFL to open up their game and start throwing the ball more.
He is John McClain down in Houston. John, appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much as always.
Absolutely. John McClain joins us every Monday at 2 o'clock for a half hour. We'll come back with more here on this Monday, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.